Gonna be more disciplined today.
Good.
Because I have to.
You had to get something done.
Well, no, not just that. No, I have to leave by about 11:15 or so.
That's all right.
So we kind of went on a long time last time.
Did we? I forget what we did last
Oh,
time.
I think we talked
For an hour at least.
I was gonna say 3. And you spent as much time interviewing me as that I ask you questions.
You're willing to talk.
I was willing to talk. I'm always willing to talk,
Yeah, I know.
and I don't expect we'll finish today,
Well,
so it
what do
doesn't
you want me
matter.
to
But
tell you?
the general topics of what I was planning to talk to you about
Yeah.
are sort of MSU governance issues
Okay.
and the history of that, the grievance procedure. What you know of it from personal involvement, plus what you know of it through sort of the
To my
governance.
knowledge, I've never been grieved. Isn't that interesting?
I believe it.
It's a long time.
Well, I think you would have known if you had been. You might not know if somebody came to complain to the grievance official.
Yeah, they probably
That,
did that. I don't know.
but a grievance filed against you would have known. And then a third kind of area would be, and it may or may not be related in your mind, kind of history of labor relations at Michigan State, both the
Well, I can tell you about that striking thing.
attempts to unionize the faculty and then
I
the
remember that.
non-faculty, the CT union and that sort of stuff. And then I have a few documents with me, should we need them or get a chance to. So we kind of go in whatever order you'd like.
Any order you want. You set the pace. You set the
Well.
direction. I'll talk about whatever you want.
Well, it won't matter if you go back and forth. But so let's talk about the grievance procedure. What are your recollections in terms of how and why it started and
Well, Zoltan Ferency was the other side all the time.
the other side of what?
Whenever there was a grievance discussion,
Okay.
Zoltan was always on the other team.
Okay, what team were you on?
I was representing administration mostly.
Okay.
And he would represent some faculty member, and they'd go to Zoltan, and the administration would come to me, and then we would meet in the battleground. And we had some in sessions that lasted till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Now, are you recalling this with different grievance officials or?
Yeah. Actually, Rubner, was it Rubner? What is his name?
Rubner.
Rubner, yeah.
Michael.
Michael. Who else do we have? The philosopher, what was his name?
Bruce Miller.
Bruce Miller, right.
Mary Lee Brady.
Yeah, Mary Lee Brady, I remember her well.
Okay.
She was over in obstetrics.
Okay.
That's her department.
There was also a two. Bruce did it twice. He was grievance official, and another time he came in as interim. Another person who did that they were official, but also interim. I think you'll remember since I mentioned his name, Lash LaRue.
Oh yeah, I know Lash well. I knew Lash very well.
There were a couple other
I
people,
remember when he
but
got sick.
those are the ones that sort of
But
did.
Lash was always fun.
In what way?
Great sense of humor. And he was fun to deal with because he was sharp and no nonsense, but had a great sense of humor. I enjoyed him. I enjoyed them all.
So did you sort of, you represented administrators usually in
Yeah.
the process at
Yeah.
hearings.
Once in a while, I would advise faculty.
Somebody you knew or.
Yeah, well, they come up. I don't even know them sometimes. They come and not make
Oh.
an appointment to see me. I have no idea what to. I mean, I've been. The departments I got to know well, it's been incredible. Because I get to know. Well, you know.
Yeah, I understand.
I get to know an awful lot of people in a lot of departments I wouldn't know but for this process.
Right.
And this, I taught me a lot about the university. Taught me a lot about how you don't deal with people. 99% of the problem was communication.
Okay. What do you mean by that? What do you mean by communication?
People misunderstood each other without listening. And both sides did it. But most of the problem and grievances, people don't understand what they've said or what other people have said to them. And they get upset.
Because of that
Yeah.
misunderstanding.
Yeah. They think what that someone's trying to do something negative to them, and there was no intention of doing that, you know? On both sides.
Right.
You know that. I mean, that's what you see, too, I'm sure. You've got to see that. It's not, you're not blind to it.
No, it's one of the things that I would say.
It often causes the dispute.
Yeah. Well, that's most of the disputes I've dealt with have communication problems.
I mean, sometimes I think there's more fundamental issues involved, but for example, one area that may or may not be new is changed expectations that perhaps one's senior colleagues, one has a perception about senior colleagues and what they had to do to get reappointed or promoted or tenured, and over time those change. And then you feel like, if you're the grievant, you're the younger faculty member, I've exceeded those things, and yet I'm told I'm not good enough.
The new hurdles, yeah. I didn't deal with that much when people were not promoted or something like that.
Okay.
That didn't get a lot to me.
What did
raises you, did.
Raises? And what did you think was the reason there? For the
communication.
Okay.
Expectations. They had clearly defined what was expected, and what's happening to them was really not, wasn't in truth for happening.
Uh-huh. You know? They thought that they were being...
They thought they were being harassed a bit, or they were having problems, and they weren't having problems.
Uh-huh.
You know, that was a common issue.
Now, did people come to you because of your law degree, or was this even before?
It was before then.
Okay.
But I have no idea why they came to me. Deans came to me frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow the word got upstairs before Luana was the provost even, you know, that you ought to go to him. I don't know why. I'd had a lot of experience running departments, and I never had any trouble running one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to be here for 36 years as chairman, and nobody ever grieved me.
Uh-huh.
Nobody really threatened to. You know, they think that's unusual.
I think it's unusual nobody ever told you that they were going to go see a grievance official.
But no.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'd work it out with them. If they were angry with me, I'd try to solve the problem.
Well,
I mean, that's just good management.
Absolutely. Sometimes, though, people have a perception that you can't. So, mostly, these were instances of you representing administrators, deans, directors, or chairs. They came to you and said, would you help me out? Somebody's filed a grievance against me.
That would be by far the most.
Okay, and a number of those were over annual raises and salary.
Right.
And what were some of the
promotions.
Other promotions?
I wouldn't pick to be promoted or something, or the department's out to get me, paranoia. Basic paranoia. I mean, they just deal like you do with paranoia in psychiatry.
Without naming names, can you think of certain kinds of cases or some that were interesting because they do stick with you?
Why can't I name names?
Or you can. I'm taping you, so I
don't care.
Okay, that's fine.
Harvey Sparks had one.
No, that's fine.
He had a guy over in physiology that just drove him crazy.
Uh-huh.
And this guy was just a bulldog. Faculty member. Got his teeth into issues, and he just wouldn't. And he was ethnic foreign, which was not uncommon either.
Uh-huh.
They just didn't understand what it was to have a peaceful settlement of a problem.
Uh-huh.
And there were groups of people like that, I mean, a number of them, who just felt that it was their right to have the problem settled their way. And that's not uncommon.
Mm-hmm. How frequently do you think it is a kind of a ethnic or cultural aspect to these disputes?
Quite frequent. I would say almost very frequent.
Uh-huh.
50%, 40%.
Uh-huh.
At the level of dispute that I got, they just have basic misunderstanding. Well, let's take the guy we've had and he's not that's not an ethnic issue, but he has such a different idea. What's that name?
I don't know which one you're talking about. We did quite a few.
Ashbourne. Well, the guy. That one guy. He just fights all the time over in botany and plant pathology. I don't remember his name, but he would be just aggressively grab onto an issue, and he would not let go, no matter who said it was. And you could take him to the Supreme Court. He wouldn't agree with the solution, whatever they gave him. And you have people like that.
I mean, I remember one, I
know. I didn't have many with you compared to the other people.
What's that?
I did not have many with you.
Okay.
I mean, when you were, you didn't use me as much as the other people did.
You're talking about as when I was grievance official?
Grievance official.
But I wasn't calling we have you on our list.
Yeah.
So that's really an administrator's calling you.
Yeah.
But.
I usually didn't know these people at all before.
Right. The times I had most interactions with you was when you and I were counsels on the opposite side.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Which was during Rubner's time.
Yeah.
I can't remember if you and I also were involved in any under Lashes or Mary Brady's, because I did some presiding officers for both of them and also counsel. While Zoltan was still alive, Zoltan got a lot of the business for representing faculty. So I didn't get do as much.
And I got a lot of the business representing the administration when Zoltan was alive.
So
Zoltan and I used to have wonderful discussions. He was a good guy to work with because he was bright and he was honest, I thought.
I know I was at a hearing where Zoltan was the counsel for the faculty, and it might have been you for the administrator.
Yeah.
And it was an amazing experience. I might have been presiding officer or something.
I think you might have been.
And it was like late 80s. And
yeah, I think you might have been. I think I recall you. That may be the first time I met you.
Okay. But it was one where Z was clearly the Clarence Darrow type. I mean,
the aggressive, articulate lawyer type.
Yeah.
But if I was dealing with that one, if I remember it right, I was dealing with just purely trying to reason.
Yeah. And
putting on no show at all if I could avoid it.
I don't quite believe that of you, because I've seen you do shows, too.
Well, I'm being a nice guy.
My recollection is that both of you were putting on a show and representing your clients well. But I sort of recall this, and I think it was a science person. And there's one that involved Fred Poston, and I don't know if it's that one or another one.
I've done them with Fred.
But I know he had a couple times when he was dean that he ended up getting it. But I would have thought those were probably reappointment, promotion, or tenure cases to have involved him.
Yeah.
But I do sort of recall that one with Zoltan and maybe with you that you both kind of, How many hours did you find that you needed to prepare when you were the counsel for a case?
Not much.
Not much? Okay.
Because they were the same kind of thing.
Okay. As counsel for...
When I go to court, you see, many lawyers spend an awful lot of time doing their homework. I don't.
Huh. Now, you're not going to say that's because you're just BSing it.
No. It's because it's redundant.
Okay.
I've seen it before.
Well, that happened with Bruce Miller and I in the 90s when he frequently was representing administrators and I was representing faculty members. And... we were doing the same. It was kind of Miller versus Rivette.
Yeah,
different
you've
clients.
Seen him before, yeah.
And we'd get used to what each other would do. It was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But we were not the actors that you were Zoltan were. or the, I don't, maybe actress isn't what I
Oh,
mean,
no,
but,
no, I understand it.
Yeah.
Dramatic.
Yeah. I mean, not that Bruce and I couldn't be a little, but not with the same flair.
I've had Zoltan walk out on a hearing.
Okay. To kind of make his point or to try to emphasize it. But now, Bob Ripas did some for faculty. Did you ever have him as the opposite side? Okay. Trying to think who else do I know that did a lot of faculty ones. Anyway.
A lot of faculty would come in without any help, you know.
So I've seen that as grievance official.
Most of them came in without getting external advice.
Yeah, that probably... Well, sometimes the grievance, they see the grievance official and you can give them help.
Yeah.
And they're okay.
Well, you help them, but as a whole, the grievance official has been very helpful. You know.
Mostly we can mediate a lot of things
and
not have them go to hearing. That,
looking
at all 40 years, which is what I'm partly doing, is putting together this short institutional history.
I've been in it almost that long.
It really averages only at about 3.5. the highest I've had in my 7.5 years is 8 of them, and
right.
I think the grievance hearings in a year, and I think the most ever is 9, but it really averages about 3.5.
They seem like they're more than they really were. You know, you ask to enumerate them, and I can't get up to the number they think that I feel mm-hmm. they were. When they lasted late into the night or when we had intense discussions, then I would tend to feel that that was a big time sink.
Now, that's one thing that's been different in my time is we don't do them at night anymore. Michael liked to do them at night because I think he didn't like to do them in the morning. And I like to see them done in the daytime, so we don't even, unless it's needed, we don't even offer evening ones. But Michael had them frequently occur in the evening, so
yeah.
we don't end up with that too often.
Who else was the grievance officer besides Mike?
Bruce Miller.
Bruce was benign.
Okay.
Smart, but benign.
Okay. And benign, you mean more laid
smooth,
back?
Smooth, yeah, laid back. Smooth.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Zoltan Ferency was a representative of council, but another major character on campus is Lash LaRue, and he
yeah.
was grievance official.
I remember Lash very well.
I only remember once being at a hearing he was running, or twice, and I don't...
He was, I thought, harmless, too.
What do you mean by harmless? I mean, am I not harmless? I mean, what do you mean by harmless?
I could predict his behavior.
Huh. As the grievance official, we're talking.
Whatever he was going to do, I could predict what he was going to do next. The ability to trust depends on your ability to predict.
Okay.
If I can't trust somebody, when I can't trust someone, it means I just can't predict what they're going to do next.
Okay. Now, some people would say they didn't know what Mary Lee Brady was going to do in her time. And
she wasn't very bright.
She had a kind of a
Lash
difficult...
was very bright. There's a big difference in dealing
uh-huh.
with bright people. And you're bright.
Yeah.
A very big difference to me dealing with people whose intellects you respect.
I think it overwhelmed her a little. I've interviewed her about her time, and it was
over her head.
It was it. Those years didn't go as well as some other years.
Yeah.
I think in the procedure. Now I don't know if you know Michael Harrison.
I know him very well.
He actually was the first grievance
I know that.
Official
I remember
just
when he
for
was
1 year.
I remember that. I remember when he was a grievance official. In fact, I know Mike really well. I was appointed in Lyman Briggs.
Okay.
Still am.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Because that's what he did right after being grievance official.
Right.
I interviewed him, and I can't remember
yeah.
exactly the timing. But he did it just kind of get it started at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense of why the university created the procedure?
Huh. That's a very good question. Why the university created the procedure? This was, how would I say it? A more liberal institution
uh-huh.
than those I've seen
mm-hmm.
in a community of scholars were heavily weighted toward people who were union-based.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't, every place else I've been, that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
And they look on themselves as liberal,
mm-hmm.
but they don't look on themselves as union liberal.
Right.
And this is much more concerned about fairness. Whereas the others are concerned about fairness, but they make this a public concern.
Mm-hmm.
They try to demonstrate their need to be fair. If you're just fair all the time, you don't worry about those things so much.
Uh-huh.
For some reason, there were people who were felt put upon here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it had to do with the union base here.
That it was more unionized state? And
yes.
At the time it
culture
was created,
here was,
we were very union.
Culture here was much more union
mm-hmm.
than Hopkins or Harvard. They don't need to have a union to protect them.
Well, when I explain the procedure to people at other universities, if I don't have it in my hand,
yeah.
I tell them that if they're labor relations people, that it looks very much like a collective bargaining grievance procedure,
yeah,
except
it does.
Instead of an arbitrator, the last step is the president.
Right.
But multiple steps and the time limits, there's a lot of similarity to that.
Yeah, it's a labor relations type issue here
mm-hmm.
was not that at other places I've been. If you have a grievance at Harvard, you just go to your dean or to your chairman.
Mm-hmm. My
chairs don't mean much at Harvard. Or
do you know Keith Grody at all?
Yeah, I know him very well.
I think Keith had something to do with this.
Making it labor.
Well, I think he had something to do with the design of the procedure.
Yeah, well, I think he did too.
Yeah.
I knew him very well.
We haven't done our interview yet. We've got it scheduled, so
I'll
still live up north?
Yeah, somewhat here, but mostly up north.
Yeah. His wife die?
I'm not sure yet that happened, but I think it's close.
Yeah.
It may, if I can't remember. I should, but I don't remember, Jim.
I think she did.
That may be.
I got to know Keith
I know
well.
She was ill for a long, long time.
But this was based in the labor department here, you know. The other people had sociology departments, but didn't have necessarily, I wouldn't have been able to identify who was labor, who was management.
Uh-huh.
At Hopkins.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that was true here was that several, when the, now the School of Human Resources was beginning, it was the Center for Labor Industrial Relations, and all the original faculty had dual appointments to departments. So the Jack Steber and Charles Killingsworth, if you remember both of them.
I remember Jack.
They were econ profs.
His wife, too, was a...
Carolyn became the ombudsperson,
yeah.
But she was in
Who's
political science. Stan Soffen is retired, and the new one is Bob... starts with a C.
What does the ombudsman do?
Handles student faculty complaints mostly, but anything that's a student-based complaint, so or a complaint against a student. So I think a lot of the business is issues of plagiarism or issues of complaints of unfair grades. There's other things they do too, but Cadwell?
Do people complain about unfair grades?
Students do, yeah. I don't know how much. It's not my area.
Yeah.
The only time the grievance office gets involved with the ombuds is sometimes if a faculty member gets in trouble when a grievance is filed against them, and then their chair raises a lot of questions. If they fear they're going to be disciplined or they are disciplined, then they might come see me, and so I would deal with it. But Stan Soffen did it for about 14 years, and they're actually doing a retirement event for Stan.
Yeah, I know that. Together.
Right, together for ending our careers as these two officials. But Joy Curtis, Carolyn Steber, there have been several people that have done that.
Remember, she and her husband both.
But did you see any connection to, there was an attempt to unionize faculty back in the early 70s. Was that at all tied into this grievance procedures creation, or not really in your mind? Is that a connection?
No, I don't see it in my mind at all. The grievance, the attempt to unionize faculty, were the people here were the deep union kind of people, as far as I was concerned. Mm-hmm. And where I was from, we never had a need for union, I didn't think.
Uh-huh.
I could always get peace with anyone who was trying to tell me what to do. I could make peace with them. I just talked to them.
So what faculty did, I'll come back to grievance procedure, but what faculty did you have a sense of were most interested in unionizing faculty here?
The far left. People who, in my opinion, were off, far left.
Okay, politically.
Politically.
But what, did you have a sense of it certain departments, or just that it
well,
was
I
mostly
thought,
a political thing?
You know, my mind's eye says, that's sociology.
Okay.
That's political science. That's not business.
Uh-huh.
You never see that in the business school.
Mm-hmm.
But there were people over there in that doing it.
Confused.
But they weren't, but you wouldn't, my mind's eye would, once you're in business, you know, you have responsibility for your own destiny.
Mm-hmm.
You don't call upon others to take care of you.
Now, had you, I know something about, there were three times that the faculty had a vote on whether to unionize.
Yeah.
And I was here for the second and the third.
I might have been here.
The second was in...
I was concerned that it might come to pass, but I didn't really pay attention to it.
78, 79, the next one was 81,
yeah.
82. I don't, the first one is way back in the beginning of the 70s, and I'm just learning about it.
I remember that. I was
before my time.
Well, I remember when it was the first one, and I remember the very first issue. That really scared us a lot, because it would make it very hard for me to recruit faculty.
Us as administrators, you mean? It was a concern, or just
as a university.
Okay. You were an administrator already, then.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I came as an administrator.
So, were there discussions? Do you recall discussions among deans, directors, and chairs?
Something we weren't supposed to discuss.
Oh.
So I don't remember
there
ever.
There weren't meetings pulled together by the provost office saying, here's what you should or
talk to him. No, I didn't remember that at all.
Oh, okay.
In fact, all I remember is that we can't discuss this. It's illegal.
Okay. Interesting.
We didn't. I never remember discussing it.
The unionized idea.
We would do it over a beer or something.
Uh-huh.
With other chairs, I'd sit and talk and say, this would be bad if this came to pass because I won't be able to recruit people. Many people won't go to a university that's unionized.
Uh-huh.
And then Wayne went ahead and did it, you know.
Mm-hmm. But you don't have a sense of I don't even know who the provost was in 71 or 2.
Lee Winder.
Was it? Okay. You don't have a sense of meetings that were held with him at all around
We didn't meet at all.
Okay. So
if he did, he didn't invite me.
Mm-hmm. The second and third time, the late 70s and early 80s efforts, there were, when people voted at the election that the Michigan Employment Relations Commission conducted, there were three choices on the ballot. Do you recall that?
Yeah, union, no union, or...
I'll tell you, but I just wondered.
I don't remember.
There were two different unions on the ballot.
That's right. I remember that.
And one was called Faculty Associates.
Yeah.
And it was connected to the Michigan Education Association. The other was AAUP.
AAUP was the one that I was most opposed to.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, why was that? Because that was some of the...
They seemed so far liberal to me.
Really?
Huh. Yeah. I joined them.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I might even ran for office in them.
In the AUP chapter?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Because the only way I figured you're going to fix it is get in there yourself and do it.
Okay.
The people who I were talking to were so far liberal.
Uh-huh.
And I am basically a liberal.
Mm-hmm.
In the eyes of people who know me, my parents, my family considers
right.
me way left.
Uh-huh. But you thought these people were farther.
Yeah, well, they were.
Do you recall
I couldn't grab to them. I couldn't reach them.
Do you recall who any of the people were? Who you
no,
thought
I
was
don't.
Okay? Because actually, I believe I don't know that he was very involved, but I think Lance LaRue was in the AAUP.
Yeah.
Coletta Mosher, I think.
Coletta Mosher, I remember well. She was on the opposite side from me in a lot of issues.
Okay. Yeah. Like in governance thing issues.
Liberals
are
mentioned.
Okay. Okay.
She was left to where I would have been.
Uh-huh.
She was an ag.
Ag economics.
Ag economics.
Yeah.
She was left to where I would have thought to be.
Uh-huh.
Now, I don't consider myself far right because everyone I know is further right than I was. For example, I was a Millikan Republican.
Uh-huh.
But I was opposed to Goldwater.
Okay. Well, I would think those two go together. I think of Goldwater as being kind of much more conservative than Millikan Republicans.
Yeah. But what got me in the state was the Brinkley?
Brinkley, I think, was lieutenant governor for Millikan the last time.
And Brinkley, when he ran, he was very far right as far as I was concerned.
Okay. I don't recall. I know he was lieutenant governor. I can't remember then his own campaign, to tell you the truth. And nor who did he run against it. It might have been Jim Blanchard that he ran against, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, he might have.
I'm not
Jim's
sure.
Jim's a friend of mine. But he's a... I would be a Blanchard Democrat.
So back to the faculty...
When I had to register, and what party I had to register in here, I registered a Democrat, and I ran for office once, and the Republican... For the Republican state delegate.
For a precinct delegate to the state convention.
Yeah.
When you came first to MSU.
Well, no, I did that when Cedarburg was in the...
Okay. The grievance procedure got revised a couple times. Were you ever in governance when that occurred?
No.
Okay.
No.
I know you were very much in governance when the faculty voice issues came up. What do you recall of that sort of... You were actually in a special position, right?
I was
some of that.
I was on ECAC.
Uh-huh.
Faculty voice, John, I thought it was initially managed very poorly.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have a lot of respect for John. What's his name?
Yes, I it'll come to me in a second.
You know who I mean.
I know who you mean.
Nice guy, but he was very insecure.
Okay.
Engineering. Mm-hmm. He was in engineering.
He was the ECAC chair.
Yeah, he never
when it first came up.
You know, I try to look up people's academic credentials, and he didn't have any.
Okay.
And that didn't impress me.
So it had already started in his term, and then it carried over when
my
you...
My term, yeah.
Now, how did you decide to be on ECAC and chair this thing? Somebody asked you, or you just thought, this is something I want to add to my resume?
The president asked me if I get in there and make it go smoothly.
Okay.
Okay?
That makes sense.
She wasn't president at the time.
Right.
But she said, when she was running for president, she said, could you get in there and help me make this go smoothly?
Mm-hmm.
Because it could be all messed up.
What do you recall was the genesis behind the faculty voice?
Well, it was actually the medical schools arbitrarily being done by the president, shipping a medical school off to Grand Rapids.
That was certainly a big trigger, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, that was the definitive last trigger.
Uh-huh.
But many things, the fact they didn't think they had the voice in before then,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't. And a guy like McPherson wouldn't tolerate the faculty having a voice.
Uh-huh.
And he felt he was the boss. And bosses know what bosses do. And, you know, he was, the faculty had no right to interfere with him being boss. That was his view of it. And
well,
Peters is still a very good friend. I talked to him on the phone frequently.
Good. Glad to hear that.
Yeah, I know him very well. But he was very far to the right.
Mm.
His wife was much further to the right.
I didn't know her. I mean, I know who she was, but
oh
I didn't personally
God.
Ever meet talk to her.
Oh, my God.
No.
She was so far right. She was just...
Was she also with a farm, small Michigan background? Or?
No, she's from New York.
Oh.
From
oh.
Washington, actually.
Wow.
D.C.
Didn't know that.
We came, when McPherson came,
mm-hmm.
I said, Peter, you got to talk to the Republicans. You are never going to survive here if you're just always so polar in your political position.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, we're going to have a dinner for you. So I talked to Larry and
mm-hmm.
Faleno, and I says, why don't we have a dinner? And we put it at your house. And we had a dinner with Blanchards and
mm-hmm.
McPherson's and the Owens, four couples,
mm-hmm.
at Owens' house.
Mm-hmm.
And she came, and Peter told her to keep your mouth shut because Blanchard was governor, you know. And so she says, I went there with my mouth sealed.
Very funny.
It was a funny evening.
Bet it was.
It was quite tense to begin with,
mm.
but we broke the ice, and I was on both sides of the game,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't have any axe to grind. And, of course, Blanchard and Owens were very polar,
mm-hmm.
and I was looked on more with Peter trying to see if I can introduce him to the Democrats.
Uh-huh.
That evening went very well. When the evening was over with, I says, this has gone really well. I got the Democrats and Republicans talking. Why don't we have it? Why don't we invite Blanchard and Owens over to a dinner? Peter, at your house, at Carl's house.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have the. They paid for everything because I didn't have. And so let's invite them. So when we were getting our coats on ready to go, I said, let's invite them to Carl's house, Peter.
Uh-huh.
We couldn't do a damn thing but invite them.
Right.
And all four of us stand in there.
Right.
There eight of us. So we went to Kyle's house for another dinner, and we got to become, and actually now, McPherson's and the Owens are very close friends.
Oh, good.
And they got to be smokers together.
Uh-huh.
We took cruises together.
Oh, cruises too?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I've taken Peter a lot of places. We went to the Bordeaux part of France.
Oh, really?
I took him into the Hermitage.
Wow.
Through the Hermitage.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I didn't know about those sort of stories.
Oh, well, I'm a social character.
Well, I understand that, but I didn't know you took people to Russia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in fact, well, they'd pay for it, too.
Well, I understand.
You know, I would just arrange for it.
You were a travel guide.
I know the places well.
Mm-hmm.
I can show you Paris in a day. In Rome in a day, like you can't possibly get visited with anybody else.
That's good. I know how to do that.
I've taken a lot of people through.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I did the before the grievance job for 6 years. I was did the Meet Michigan program. I coordinated that. So.
I don't know anything about that.
Have you never heard of that one?
I heard about it.
Oh,
but
okay.
I never did it.
Well, it was for new faculty. You were never new, so.
I wasn't new.
I don't.
I had my first year here.
It didn't exist back then. But back on something we chatted about. So faculty voice to you, much of it was about the president's decision to move part of med school to Grand Rapids.
And the president making arbitrary decisions without involvement of the faculty.
Uh-huh.
And he would do that. He would get the board on his side. And I told him, Peter, that's not a way to behave. And he didn't understand it. He was the CEO, and by God, CEOs can do this.
What was your perception of the reason that they decided they needed to move some or all of the med school to Grand Rapids?
Money.
What do you mean by money? I mean,
this town was not very accepting of the physicians that the university was bringing in. The money available from health care in this town was severely limited in the possession of the practicing doctors, and they would not admit me to the staff at Sparrow Hospital, even though I'd been on the staff at Johns Hopkins.
Hmm. Because of
and
what?
At Harvard. I wasn't qualified.
So it's like a little club and they hold it tight?
Bullshit. Frankly, bullshit. I mean, you know, and I didn't tolerate that well. But that was when I first came here. They denied, I mean, people were trying to hold off appointing anyone from the faculty onto the staff because
mm-hmm.
they would take patients away. Well, this town needed
mm-hmm.
improved health care.
Mm-hmm.
They had it in Grand Rapids was much better health care
mm-hmm.
than here. And I practiced in Grand Rapids. But they were slightly more open, although they're not very open either. Nobody wanted to invite their competition in because they're all
mm-hmm.
insecure. It's amazing how insecure physicians are, you know.
Now, one perception.
I hope you're getting this all down.
I think so. One perception of the reason for the move was that Grand Valley State was threatening to create
yes.
their own med school.
Yes.
You know, is that sort of a
this
true story?
This state, where we looked at the state as three economic corridors.
Mm-hmm.
The eastern corridor was Detroit North. The mid corridor was where we were, which was relatively impoverished. The western corridor was much more prosperous, but they had the richness of Grand Rapids, Kalamazoo, Traverse
mm-hmm.
City, and the rich people from Chicago going into the west to the
mm-hmm.
Resort areas of the western
mm-hmm.
Michigan. But the major thing was Grand Rapids, and they were driving the scene. And they had good medical care there. So I got in front of the board here and testified in favor of having Grand Rapids branch be a dominant branch. But I didn't want to close this one. You know, I wanted to expand it.
Uh-huh.
But not, I wouldn't have listened as readily as was finally done to the fact that they wouldn't take Michigan State if we didn't get rid of Lansing. You know, they wanted Grand Rapids to be the everything, which it now is. And that's very unfortunate here because many people have their lives changed to come here and build up a medical mm-hmm. enterprise in Lansing, and they can't do it.
So this now is like Saginaw or other satellites,
yeah.
really.
Yeah.
Do you believe if MSU hadn't done it, the Grand Valley would have created a successful med school, probably?
Yes.
Uh-huh. So Peter or whoever did read the tea leaf correct or had
well, but Grand Rapids, but there's four or five new medical schools in the state already. There's the Kalamazoo,
mm-hmm.
Western's done it.
Mm-hmm.
Beaumont Hospital's done it.
Mm-hmm.
Who else has got it? Well, we've got two new ones in Detroit area, Macomb.
Mm-hmm.
The osteopaths have done a bunch.
Mm-hmm. What's my understanding, Oakland and Central are both looking to add because that seems to be the only way to get the legislators' attention. I think it might be the perception.
Yeah, I think that's where the money is.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, Grand Rapids did a very good thing. They studied
mm-hmm.
how can we have economic development here in the future. And the best place to develop economically and with jobs is a medical environment.
Mm-hmm.
Build a medical center. And people that have done that have done very well.
Downtown Grand Rapids is a new town.
Absolutely.
It's quite a growth place.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's just because of medical, no question.
Yeah. They could have done it here.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't. The university didn't push it here. The doctors here beat the university to a pulp.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So.
When I say that to the press, it gets them very nervous.
Mm-hmm. So that was one of the reasons for Faculty Voice to start. It then got kind of a committee of
right.
some different active people involved.
Right. And many committees.
Many committees. And you then sort of had some role. What? How would you summarize what positive or not positive came out of that Faculty Voice
I think
business?
People think they have more of a voice.
Okay.
I think they always had a voice if they knew how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
I never had a problem finding voice. You know, I've never complained about mm-hmm. inability to speak.
I mean, you chaired quite a few meetings that I was in the room that
yeah.
all these kind of changes
yeah.
were brought up.
Right.
And
I supported doing whatever the faculty wanted to do.
Uh-huh. But did much come out of it, really?
Yeah, I did. We revised the organization.
Uh-huh.
Does the fact they have more of a voice? I don't know about that. I think they always had a voice.
Okay. While we're on that topic, in that situation, you worked with the Secretary for Academic Governance.
Right.
Jackie Wright.
Yeah. John wanted to get rid of her.
Stickland?
Yeah.
Is that the name?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, well, but it was, whoa. She was up for renewal, and he was violently opposed, not violent. He was earnestly opposed to having her be renewed.
What did she do that would have bothered him?
She wasn't speaking up enough for the faculty.
Okay, she was taking Luann or
yeah.
Kim's
and
side too much?
She's soft in that, you know?
Uh-huh. So I was going to ask you, you must have, I don't know how much governance you did before that time because you were an administrator.
I served on the governance people here appointed me on the Blue Ribbon Committee of Mackey.
Selecting him?
No. Mackey came here with a mandate
right.
to cut the budget and
that
get rid of all those social programs like that the Black College, whatever the name of it was.
Urban Affairs.
Things that grew out of the 60s.
Right.
The riots, and they had that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Things grew out, and the university reorganized itself to some degree to meet their needs. And Walter Adams did that. He helped create that that school because he marched with the people who were marching. He did it, I mean, he told me because he felt that was the way to get on their side and have it work.
Did you think Justin Morrill was part of that too?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Was all part of that. That's too bad because Justin Morrill had some good things. And we're back to try to do something like Justin Morrill now with this new college.
The Residential College
right.
in Arts and Humanities.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I was opposed to them cutting out Lyman Briggs. My kids are in it.
When they made it a school instead of a college?
Yeah.
Or, uh-huh. And now this was all during Mackey's time of trying to
right. That, well, we
cut
had
back.
The select committee. Did you ever read that report?
Yeah, it's been a long time.
But the organized select committee, there were a couple of really neat people I met on that. I forget, but Walter Adams was on the committee.
Uh-huh. Was Jack Bass?
Jack Bass was, he wasn't on the committee.
Okay.
Jack Bass is the guy who, when we wrote our report, he said, the elephant has labored and brought forth a mouse.
Okay.
I remember that. It was a rather colorful description.
I met him a couple times in the grievance procedure. He must have represented somebody.
He was very angry. He's a physicist.
Uh-huh.
And he was an angry physicist.
No.
I don't know what happened to him, do you?
I saw him within the last year at something, because we chatted about something related to the grievance process, and maybe he represented a...
Yeah.
Someone
well, he would be grieving quite a bit, I think. He used to be a chronic thorn on everybody's side.
Anyways, I was going to ask you about the ex-secretary for academic governance. If you had if you had interactions with some of the others, Henry Silverman was it for a while?
He was very benign.
Really? That surprises me. Now I'm trying to think of the gentleman's name from education who was so active in the governance system. It'll come to me in a second. He did things in the grievance procedure, and he also was the secretary for
anti-governance.
You realize
that was in the, when I was on that, I just wasn't here very long before, and I got a call, would I be willing to serve on this Blue Ribbon Committee for the president?
Mm-hmm.
And we spent 400 hours.
So what all did you do as that committee?
We did a zero-based budget in the entire university.
Okay.
Everybody had to come in and justify their position, their what they were here for. In fact, Jack Breslin came in and justified his role.
Uh-huh.
It was a tremendous education about the university. And I had just been coming off of being a dean at Hopkins, and so it was, to me, a very interesting learning of what this place was. In fact, as a tutorial, you couldn't beat it.
Hmm.
When people have to come in and justify why they're there,
uh-huh.
and we would sit around a table, about 10 of us, and we'd get two or three people justifying programs. Every program had to be defended. Mm-hmm. Every college had to be defended. And then we decided to close Urban Affairs. I remember that well. And they were saying, how can we do that? What can we give them to go with that? Well, let's get it balanced. And nursing was not doing very well nationally because they had a baccalaureate program. An awful lot of nurses were hospital trained. And so they were trying to raise the standards of nursing, they said, but they were diminishing the number of nurses available.
Okay.
We heard from both of those sides, and the group voted that let's eliminate our unusual nursing school compared mm-hmm. to where the average nurse comes from. At the same time, we're going to get rid of the, and therefore it'll be easier to get through. We probably will have to mm-hmm. take nursing back, but we're going to put them both on the platter at the same time.
Gotcha.
Because just to shut down the black school would have been really tough.
But in the end, the nursing program wasn't
back.
Cut.
No, it wasn't. But it was cut. And
it was
on our initial
cut, but not eliminated.
Yeah.
And one of the perceptions was that that didn't happen because they were able to get so many nurses in the state to come in and support.
They did.
Okay.
And these nurses wanted to elevate the position of nursing from being a baccalaureate, I mean, to a baccalaureate degree.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't before then. They were hospital-trained nurses, diploma nurses, they called
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did, and that's been a good thing.
Now, another thing that came a little later in governance, and I don't know if you were involved, Bruce Miller was the move from terms to semesters.
Yeah, I was involved in that.
Uh-huh.
Dave Gift got actively involved in that.
Was that much of a difficult issue of whether or not to do it, or was it just an issue of how to do it?
Once to do it? Well, I didn't think that was as controversial.
Uh-huh.
People had ownership in what used to be always. That's very conservative. People do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't think that was as big a battle at all.
So,
when we cut the water resources, I mean, there were so many big things cut here
mm-hmm.
when we had the big cut.
Mm-hmm.
We had $29 million we cut out in 3 months.
The Cecil Mankey cuts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he came to do, and that's why he was fired.
Now, I didn't know he was fired. I just thought...
Well, he wasn't fired. In fact...
He's still here.
I know.
As a professor.
But as president.
Right.
He was not fired. In fact, they didn't want him to go. You ought to talk, if you want to get some details on this, talk to the guy who was chairman of the board at the time, that meat packer from... nice guy.
I'm sure I know the name, but I can't think of
it. Pigeon was his colleague. He was a Republican.
Okay.
And he was there. He was chairman of the board.
Uh-huh.
He's the guy that first came after me to go be president.
Okay.
And he came and sat with me and tried to talk me into it.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Back to the grievance procedure and governance for a minute. One of the phrases that gets used at Michigan State a lot is shared responsibility.
Yeah.
And
I always believed in that.
What did that mean to you?
Well, Peter McPherson didn't believe in that, okay?
Uh-huh.
That means that the faculty has a voice in the major decisions that are going to affect the university. The destiny of the university is not in the hands of the administration alone. It was in the hands of the faculty and representing student interests,
mm-hmm.
The administration would represent the administration's interest. We didn't have administrators who were heavily involved in faculty concerns.
Mm-hmm. The in the grievance procedure, I'm holding a document when C.L. Winder was provost.
Yeah.
Went to the faculty council on faculty grievance procedure, and it notes that the original was an interim faculty grievance procedure created on May 9th, 1972. Hence what I'm trying to do in terms of kind of an anniversary here of this mm-hmm. procedure. And
I came here in 75.
Okay. So it had just been going a couple of years
yeah.
before you. And then in 79, they make it a new, proposed new faculty grievance procedure in 78. In 79, they're still talking about it. And the point shared responsibility comes up. And it mentions that the purpose of the procedure is overriding spirit of most agreements. Disagreements can be resolved informally.
Right.
Is that your sense of how the procedure, what it was able to do?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Most of them are resolved informally.
True. And the FGO's main duty is to assist the parties involved in agreements to reach some form of mutually accepted informal resolution.
Correct.
So you and I have talked a little bit about your role as counsel in hearings, but sometimes as counsel, were you working to try to do informal resolutions?
Absolutely.
And how did that ever work? I mean,
I would talk to the person who came in with their problem. I said, let's solve this peacefully.
Uh-huh.
You can't predict the outcome. If you're going to get the most input to the outcome
mm-hmm.
if you can work it out with another person rather than have a third party make a decision independent of whether working it out.
Mm-hmm. In 76, when Bruce Miller was the FGO, the news bulletin did a little article called FGO Safety Valve for Faculty Frustrations.
Well, that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
Don't you think?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Well, he looks different there, doesn't he?
We all do, but that one is, that's quite a different picture, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Let's see who was a notable then. Harold Spaeth, I remember him.
Uh-huh.
Political science. The rest of them, I didn't know any of them.
Have the names on that particular page?
Nope.
Uh-huh. Anything else you'd have to say about your experience with the grievance procedure?
Well, I think it was pretty good.
Uh-huh.
Overall, my experience with them is that people got treated fairly.
Including administrators?
Yeah,
who were
everybody got treated fairly.
Uh-huh.
I didn't see it running roughshod, and the error rate was minimal.
Do you think there were some administrators on campus that had a perception that it did sometimes run roughshod?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah. Don't you?
I think there's some administrators who don't appreciate being grieved and might blame the process. The process, and not really realize that the complaint's going to be there regardless if the process exists.
You know, people don't think that they deserve to have comeuppance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people yeah. are going to, I mean, and Peter McPherson would be a classic of that.
Uh-huh.
One of those great unwashed out there coming up to me for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he really is a very noble person in his
mm-hmm.
concern for the individuals of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Global perception, Agency for International Development, AID people, and he was pretty well liked by the people in AID when he was there.
Now, do you I think we're kind of done with the grievance procedure
yeah.
discussion.
Yeah.
If other things come up, you can let me know. I'm holding this little MSU at a glance, the 2011 book, which states how many students we have now.
45,000 or?
48.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what it was when you came here?
Yeah. 8,000.
No, not that. Was it really that small?
Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Smaller than that, maybe. 1950?
Yeah, it'd probably be right. I was thinking when you came as a faculty member. No, as a student. Yes, that makes sense. Because I was going to say, when I came...
25, 30,000, maybe?
Yeah, when I came in, I think when I came in 77, that it was about 36 or something in that range.
I came in 75, and it's about 35,000.
But when you came as a student, it was 8,000.
Yeah.
Very different place.
Very different place.
Was there any medical school then?
No. It was Michigan State College of Agriculture and Applied Sciences
was
the name of it. That's what my diploma is from.
I understand. So, what was the genesis of the medical schools?
Well, we tried to have one in Grand Rapids when I was on the... I practiced medicine in Grand Rapids.
Right, you told me.
We tried to organize one there.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be in favor of it having been at Michigan State. Michigan didn't want another medical school. They fought us like hell.
Mm-hmm.
Just like they fought us getting in the Big Ten, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't want a medical school. And they still got their $700 million hospital. They were afraid it would eliminate the state from supporting their hospital.
So, were you here at the beginning of the radiology program then?
Yeah, I was. I'm the first chair.
But
they ever had. They never had any radiology program or anything like it.
When you were hired, was there a program or you were hired?
I was hired to be the first chair.
Okay. Okay. So was that a struggle that U of M opposed it or that?
No, I didn't worry about U of M then.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you how I met Michigan State. I mean, I was teaching management of medical schools for the AAMC, Association of American Medical Colleges.
Okay.
And I had been at MIT Sloan School.
Okay.
And that was being run by Sloan School for the AAMC. And I was at that time at Hopkins.
Okay.
And we went down to Tarrytown, New York for a meeting, a tutorial on how to manage a medical school. They were just bringing the concepts of management into academia, into medical schools. And I was at the same thing, and then Michigan State came, and I was quite excited to hear Michigan State was going to have a medical school. And I met with the people here, Andy Hunt, and it was a very exciting, to me, that they were going to have a medical school here, and they had to have people who knew how to manage it. So they hired me out here as a consultant,
okay.
And I came out to Michigan State, and Phil Greenman was on the committee at the time, and I tried to see what it would take to have a medical school, a radiology unit here. They had to have a radiology to be accredited.
Okay.
And they didn't have an x-ray machine. They didn't have a hospital. And they didn't have anything you'd need to have the basics.
Wow.
So they'd been trying to recruit a radiology chief here, and they had nothing to offer them. And I told that to Wharton. I met with Wharton, and I met with some members of the board. And I said, you're going to have a heck of a time having a medical school, because to have a medical school, you have to have radiology.
Right.
And you have nothing. And they didn't even have the x-ray machine.
Really?
No. So And they had it over at Olin Health Center. They had an old portable machine. $9,000, $10,000 machine.
Wow.
I said, you can't do that. It'll never fly. So I came out here and I said, you furnish the land, I'll take care of the rest.
Uh-huh.
And I had to build the buildings. But, see, I knew how to do that. That wasn't a problem. And I had to recruit good people in here. And what I did is I started it off with by hiring the best in the country to come as visiting professors for a week at a time.
For a week at a time?
Yeah. From Harvard and all over. People thought I was crazy to come out here.
I talked to Walter Adams years ago. I interviewed him about MSU history, and he talked about what it was like to come from Brooklyn or whatever
yeah.
it was out here in the kind of cultural.
Yeah, but see, this is home for me.
Uniqueness for him.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, for you it's a little different.
I came home and I wanted to help home. My parents were getting older and I wanted to spend some time with them before they died.
So pretty much your career here has always been as an administrator and a faculty member.
And a student.
And a student. Did you ever find the roles of being a faculty member and an administrator difficult or complicated? Because that, do you think that's common or unusual that that's true? Or
it should be true for anybody who wants to be an administrator. You ought to be a good faculty member.
Uh-huh.
I don't cotton much to just coming in and just administrating without ever teaching.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like teaching, you shouldn't be in a university.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not good at it, you probably shouldn't be either.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty ruthless view, but I think teaching is really what faculty are supposed to do.
I know that the provost office is, I'm holding a brochure, it's the Office of Faculty Development.
Yeah.
You know, they try to assist faculty to be better faculty. They also do programs to try to assist administrators to be better administrators. Sometimes people don't do a great thing or aren't prepared for those roles,
right.
Especially the administrator one. What do you think it takes to sort of be a successful administrator? And was it all hard knocks for you, or were there training at all?
No, I had formal training.
Okay.
I mean, I got my MBA from MIT. I took management courses, lots of them.
Okay.
And I learned, and I was managing at Hopkins. I didn't get the job at Hopkins until after I finished MIT.
Okay.
And I taught a course in worldview as seen in classical literature.
Mm.
I like that.
Well, I take it from the freshman seminars you're doing that you like to do philosophy a
yeah.
great deal.
I like to think about what it is to do whatever you're doing.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So many people are too busy doing and don't take time to think about it.
Is it Thomas Kuhn's the way to say the guy's name, the Scientific
yeah,
Revolution?
Yeah.
Right. That was kind of an eye-opening one, I think, for a lot of people.
It was.
Kind of stepping back.
I had that before. I mean, I was in that before he wrote the book.
Uh-huh.
I was in that kind of stuff, in the late 60s.
Being thoughtful and thinking about
the
bigger picture. That you're in.
Yeah. Kaizen, Better Way Every Day is a Japanese model.
Did you go to Japan ever? Or did
many times.
Did you?
In fact, I used to give talks in Japan on the Bushido Code.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When I first started to go overseas, I worked for the State Department, and I worked on Atoms in Action. And we'd agreed, I was president of the Society of Nuclear Medicine.
Okay.
And I was chief of nuclear medicine at both at Harvard. I was their first chief of nuclear medicine.
Okay.
And I was chief of nuclear medicine at Washington University.
Okay.
So I was into the applied nuclear stuff. And we set up a program that we would teach other countries peaceful use of the atom if they wouldn't build a bomb.
Mm-hmm.
That made sense.
Good.
So I would go around and I'd set up a swimming pool reactor in Korea. In South Korea. I did it in Turkey.
Okay.
And we set up a reactor there, and we would have the people from the countries come in, and we teach them. I give a lot of lectures in Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
We'd go around lecturing and stuff. It'd be kind of fun. We did it in Romania.
Okay.
I've done that off and on for years. I was the U.S. delegate to International AEC in Vienna for a while.
Back to another part of what I was getting at. How was it that you decided to do these freshman seminars yourself?
Oh, if I didn't have a chance to teach, I wouldn't want to be in a university.
Uh-huh.
And the medical schools didn't give me much chance to teach.
Oh.
I'd be a little esoteric for them.
That idea was one of Peter McPherson's, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. He and I talked about it.
Or he promoted it.
Well, he and I talked about it. I mean, I talked him into it, I think. When he first came here, I says, Peter, you really gotta learn to teach. He hadn't taught a course.
Uh-huh.
And I said, one of the first times I met him, I said, well, what you really gotta do is you gotta set up a course where you can learn. And it's real easy, Peter.
Uh-huh.
You gotta be reading things you don't understand.
Uh-huh.
And when you do that, it's wonderful to take 20 bright students and have them read it and have them tell you what they think. It's amazing what you'll learn.
I
said, Peter, this is a wonderful place. You can learn about anything you want to learn about and start doing that. And he did. And he liked it, too.
Yeah, well, I know that he promoted the program by teaching himself in it.
Yeah.
And doing some seminars himself.
Yeah. I do that. Now I teach a lot in that. I love that.
Now, some people who like to do that, and before that existed, would do the evening college kind of idea.
I never did that.
Okay.
But I've done Lyman Briggs. I teach a course called Leadership, Power, and Responsibility.
Okay.
And I start off with Plato's Republic and
okay.
Aristotle. And
so similar kind of.
Well, yeah, but then I finish up with Gandhi and Hitler contrast.
Okay. And now this is for people who are thinking.
Senior honors students, usually.
And many of them are thinking about medicine or thinking about science.
Many think about medicine, yeah.
Some are engineers.
Most people, I think, are not as liberally educated as is going to be useful for them. And they have to develop an appreciation for the liberal arts. I think it makes life much more enriching.
They're more just technical oriented, job oriented.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Most people are doing without thinking of why they're doing it.
A couple others. We've got maybe about 10 minutes.
Want to talk about?
We're talking about other unions. Grad students formed a union here a few years ago.
That.
Did you have any relationship to that? Or?
None.
Okay, you don't have grad students in this area, in radiology, that unionized? Or
no,
that,
I don't have that.
That affected? Another group that unionized farther back was the clerical.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember the time they went on strike.
You do remember that?
Yeah.
Did that affect your operation in radiology?
Yeah, it did.
What did you have to do different?
Well, limited our very initially, they were concerned that we wouldn't be able to see patients.
Oh.
You know, and we would therefore not have any income. And without any income, we wouldn't survive.
You wouldn't be able to have the gardens.
Well, we wouldn't have anything. You know, it's interesting what the gardens do. Many people like them, but many, many people are angry about them.
Angry?
Yeah.
Because you got it and they don't, or angry?
I didn't spend the money in their area of interest.
Oh.
You know, I could have put it better places, the perception is. Why didn't I use this for tuitions? Why didn't I use this to pay scholarships? Why do I put money in gardens and not in scholarships for students?
Oh.
You don't care for students, they tell me.
Hmm.
That's it. You saw that little thing that my class last term did for me?
Yep, you showed me
all those languages?
Yeah, that was neat. I like that.
Well, it was rich for them.
Uh-huh.
To appreciate someone sitting in the same room with them is thinking in a whole different symbolic language.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me. One thing, when I get asked sometimes about the grievance office, and get back on that one for a second, tell them about what the job entails. Sometimes one of my ways to sort of describe it to them is to say that partly I'm dealing with brilliant people that don't have common sense.
Maybe.
Is that a fair way to say it?
That is.
Okay. And then
I wouldn't describe, without common sense, I don't buy you a brilliant person.
Okay. That makes sense.
You're out of touch of your reality.
Okay. That I use to kind of explain sometimes why the faculty member is there. Sometimes it's the administrator's fault, though.
Yeah, yeah.
When it's the administrator's fault, what do you think what's behind it?
They don't know how to administrate.
Okay.
And it's hubris. It's arrogance. I'm powerful. I now have got a job that gives entitled to me the power.
Okay.
It's an entitlement, and that's bullshit.
I might.
I think you agree with that. I mean.
I think I might. I usually don't publicly say it that way. I say more it's somebody ended up in the job and it was a bad fit. They really shouldn't have become an administrator. And I wondered if they just took it because of the increment of the extra pay, or...
I think very few people take an administrative job for pay. They take it because of their own sense that they want to have more power.
Power or ego, reason.
Power is the ability to influence others' behavior.
Uh-huh. And sometimes those people shouldn't be in that position.
Well, you don't do it because of you can influence their behavior. Just you got to do it for some good.
Mm-hmm.
And influence behavior has got to be to both people have to see that it's got a utility to them.
Now, another thing sometimes is some units had a tradition, I don't know if it's very strong in your parts of the university or not, that being chair was kind of a duty that you should do it for a few
I've heard
years.
About that. Yeah, I heard about that.
That wasn't the case here for you,
No,
obviously.
I heard about that. That's good, but I didn't buy into that.
Uh-huh.
Because that way I would not be able to. I don't think I could have the level of influence that I wanted.
Uh-huh. Is there anything else I should ask you about the grievance procedure that I've kind of failed to?
I think you did a good job.
Failed to pick up. Okay. Well, I've had a lot of fun. I will probably have some more questions another time after I do some other interviews. But I appreciate
it. Triangulate everything I've said and find out where I'm in error. Teach me.
I'm not sure what that would be, but I will.
Well, but I'm sure I make mistakes. I'm sure I misunderstand things and misjudge them.
Well, we all do that somewhat.
Well, you don't know you do it frequently.
Well, here's a different question that just kind of invents. I'm holding a couple brochures that the provost office puts out, one on annual performance review, another on reappointment,
yeah,
promotion, tenure. They put out to try to, I think.
I did poor at both of that. I mean, I didn't do good at that.
Well, as the chair, though?
As the chair, I didn't do that well.
You didn't do your performance reviews as well as you might have? What do you mean?
What I did with the performance reviews, I knew what they were doing, and we just talked about it.
Okay.
I didn't go through all the rigor.
Oh, you didn't follow their book ideas.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that you were doing a bad job of it.
No, I think
okay.
They will tell you that they were treated fairly, most people who work with me.
Okay.
You know, but I have a pretty good feel for what they were doing, and I wouldn't go through all the, I didn't have much cotton for ritualistic management.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't do that.
No, I get what you're saying. I didn't know what you meant.
I don't manage by the numbers. I manage by the people.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the trick is in doing a good annual performance review, then?
Knowing the people working there.
Uh-huh.
And you have to set their expectations appropriately. And you work with them to set expectations. That's what a performance review does. You both have an understanding of where you want to go, what you want done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they won't feel that they work hard on getting something done that you don't even understand that they're doing.
Sometimes when you were assisting other administrators as counsel, did you have a sense that maybe the administrator didn't understand that?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Do you think out of the process maybe they got better?
I don't know.
Don't know. Because you don't sort of see them again.
Well, I see them again, but I don't know.
But you don't know how they.
I think ability to manage people, you got to get through the very first time you're called the boss, okay? You live through that week, that day,
mm-hmm,
without pushing people around. You don't use that. I mean, some people just, when they get empowered, they think they got power.
Mm-hmm.
And that means I can tell you what to do. Well, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
People won't do what you tell them what to do if you just think that's all you can do.
So what did you think was the secret to your success in your area?
I was concerned about other people.
Uh-huh.
I was as concerned about them, I hope, as I was about me.
Mm-hmm. Same for your clericals you deal with? And
yeah, for everybody.
Uh-huh.
I like people enough that I'm not going to push them around.
Is that kind of the secret, just liking people, you think?
Yeah.
That then it's that kind of.
I wouldn't want to be in a position where people push me around.
So kind of basic kind of morality or.
It's a basic reason for living.
Mm-hmm.
Well, take you do to others as you want done to you. How's that? That's not my original.
Right, but it's kind of, it makes some sense.
It does.
I found actually with the job sometimes that another thing I do to describe it to people is I say a lot of it really is just platitudes in the sense of that if you know sort of a lot of the common sense platitudes that we have about how to deal with people or about people actually sort of really come to bear.
Yeah.
You commented on one earlier in terms of I call it, there's two or more sides to every issue.
Yeah.
Kind of a platitude, but one of the things you learn in this job and dealing with grievances is that
that's true.
There's at least the two sides perceptions,
yeah.
And often that there's more than that.
You can ordinarily solve controversy by bringing a third perception for both that affects both parties.
You described another one I often think about, and that's that there's not some big conspiracy theory out there.
Yeah.
But people tend to think there is.
Yeah.
Another one is what we talk about, common sense. In certain kind of Christianity, including Catholicism, you talk about seven deadly sins. And I often tell people that a lot of the job, even though we talk about it in terms of academic and some pretty highfalutin stuff, it comes down to sometimes just those seven deadly
basic
sins.
Basic religion.
I mean, greed and
yeah.
Jealousy and some of those kind of very biblical things is what some of it's
about.
Even
by a long time.
Yeah, what some of it's all
That's
about.
That's why I can teach Plato and Aristotle. It's much more neutral than teaching religion. But if you read the Republic, there's everything in religion is in the Republic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't have to have the Bible. I teach Rig Veda, Hindu. I've been studying Hindu.
Okay.
Religious books.
Mm-hmm.
The Quran. I mean, I've read the Quran.
Mm-hmm.
Most people haven't even read it.
Mm-hmm.
It says the same thing the Bible says, but in a different way.
Uh-huh, right. Well, I really appreciate this chance to chat, Jim. I've had
I
fun.
I do, too.
I
enjoy talking to you. You're a pretty nice guy. In fact, you're a very nice guy.
Well, I appreciate you saying that.